This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
The topic we're going to talk about this evening is Shmiras Vayinayim, guarding one's eyes. You know, these weeks, beginning Parsha Shemais, are known as the weeks of Shoivavim. Weeks of Shoivavim, right? Shemais, Va'era, Bay, B'Shalach, Yisrael, Mishpatim, stand for Shoivavim, and traditionally it's a time that people try to improve themselves in areas of Kedusha, sanctifying themselves. So we're going to examine something that's very interesting. And that is, if you notice, when you put on tefillin in the morning, you look at your tefillin shel rosh. If you ever took a look at it, actually, if you're up enough, if you're actually awake, when you're putting on your tefillin, you'll notice that out of the bias of the tefillin, there are a few hairs sticking out. You ever see that?
Yeah.
It's actually the hairs of an egal, of a calf. It's halacha l'moshe misinai that for tefillin to be kosher, they have to have these hairs sticking out of the bias. So the question is, why in the world do we have hair sticking out of the bias of the tefillin? So there's a very interesting sefer. The sefer is called Metsudas David. Metsudas David was written by the Radvaz. Anyone ever hear the Radvaz?
Yes.
Radvaz was the Rebbe of the Arizal. Okay, he was the Rav in Cairo for 40 years. He wrote more than 1,500 shuvas. He was a prolific writer. And he also wrote something like the Sefer HaChinuch. The Sefer HaChinuch is a book that explains the various mitzvahs. So the Metsudas David wrote a book about the mitzvahs, a sefer about the mitzvahs, but he explains the mitzvahs in more of a mystical way. Right? You know, over chillant, you could say anything, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, so he writes like this. What's the inyan of having the hair stick out of the tefillin? So he says the following. And he says, basically, whenever a person's about to do a mitzvah, there's somebody going to come down to this world, or somebody who's going to rear his ugly head. Who's that? The Satan, the Yitzhar. He's going to try to stop. Right, so if a Satan sees here you have a yid, he's about to put on tefillin. Tefillin is an amazing mitzvah, a tremendous mitzvah. Not only, you know, you're doing a mitzvah, actually if you look in the Be'er Halacha says that when you put on tefillin, you're not just doing a mitzvah, you're actually becoming part of the Chetzah Shel Mitzvah. You know, it's one thing, you bring a carbon, so you're doing the mitzvah. Tefillin, you're becoming part of the item. You're the... Right, you're part of the cheftz of the tefillin. The tefillin is wrapped around you, so the satan's going to rear his ugly head. He's going to try to interfere. So you want to throw the satan off. We want to, you know, catch him off guard. We want to make him think we're on his side. So what do? We put in here of an egel. So the satan's like, oh great, look what they're doing. They're reminding Hashem about the chedo egel. So the satan has no problem with the mitzvah. So he backs off and he lets us do the mitzvah. So that's the reason that the Metsudas David says that we have halacha l'moshe misinai, why we have to have the hair sticking out of the egel. He calls this shoychad l'satan. You got to bribe the satan. So when we hear a concept like that, does anybody ever come across anywhere else in the Torah where we have this idea of shoychad l'satan?
Shofar.
Bribe the satan. Okay. By shofar, yeah, there we want to trick, okay, good. We want to trick the satan to think that either we don't blow before Rosh Hashanah, or we blow twice, right? Where do we ever try to give something to Satan, you know, like throw him a bone?
No, it's just the fast car, you know.
Okay, so there it's like, okay, good. There the Torah recognizes the power of the Satan. You have, in Parshas Achrimos, you have something called the Sar La'Azazel. What's the Sar La'Azazel? You have two goats, they look exactly the same, right? What?
Scapegoat,
yeah. You have two goats, they look exactly the same. They're the same height, the same color, they look exactly the same. One goat you give to the Beis HaMikdash, you're offering the Beis HaMikdash. One goat you throw off the cliff, supposedly it's going to the Satan. So what in the world is this concept? You bring a carbon to the Satan, like all of a sudden the Satan is like some kind of god, Chas V'Shalom, that you're offering a carbon? And what's this idea that you want to throw the satan a bone? So it almost sounds like it's some kind of, you know, a Kabbalistic idea that we have absolutely no idea what it means, that the satan's going to interfere with us putting on tefillin, so we remind him of the chedo ego, so he backs off. He thinks we're doing an avera, so he lets us do the mitzvah. I mean, how do we understand this? So the Michtav Me'eliyahu explains this on a very practical level, okay? And the idea, Rabbi said, that the Michtav Me'eliyahu advances, I find to be the most powerful tool that I know against the Yetzer Hara. Okay? And I'm not exaggerating when I say that. He says like this. Yeah, I have little kids at home. So, you know, you tell them it's 8 o'clock. Get to bed already! What are you up for reading? We're reading. Get into bed! So what does the kid say? No. So what do? Get into bed! And what does the kid say? Nah, no, no, right? So what do? You scream louder. And the louder you scream, the more the kid is stubborn. And the more the kid is stubborn, the more you scream. And basically, the more you push, the more they push back. Right? You ever, you know, you call up a company, they send you a bad product. So you say, I don't understand, you send me a pair of shoes, I order 9.5. Sir, you ordered a 9. I order 9.5, what are you talking about? She said, sir, on our record we have 9. That's it, I'm never shopping in your store again. Fine, we don't need you, right? The more you argue with somebody, the more you put pressure on somebody, the more they fight back. That's human nature. Even in the laws of physics, if you take a hatchet, and I don't know if this is true or not, but this is what he says. That, you know, if you take a hatchet, the harder you exert force on something, the more that thing exerts force on the item you're using. Yeah, is that true? That's what he says. So yeah.
Newton.
Yeah.
Any force superposed leads to an equal and opposite force back onto you.
Exactly. Anytime you exert force on something, the laws of physics say. That's what he says. Yeah. What is that principle called?
Newton's third law.
You don't remember? Okay. Good. I don't remember. Or, for example, like this. You ever try, you know, you're in the middle of davening, and, you know, something pops into your head maybe you shouldn't be thinking about. Or b'chlal, you know, some of your improper thought enters a person's mind. So the more you say, okay, I'm not going to think about that, the more you sort of put pressure on yourself, don't think about that, don't think about that, don't think about it, guess what? The more you're going to think about it.
Shaker presents that, there's just a strain. The more you press on, the more you press on, the more it's going to put more pressure back at you. That's like a good thing when you think about it for like.
Or even there's a thing, you know, if you go like this to somebody, they will go like that to you. Right? It's just an knee-jerk reaction, right? If you go like this, they'll do it softer. If you do it extremely soft, and if you do it very, very soft, they won't even respond. Sometimes the more pressure you put on something, the more pressure is exerted in the opposite direction. And it's the same thing when it comes to the Yetzer Hara. And here, the Mechtam Elio says an amazing thing. Let's say you're in the middle of learning, and all, you know, you're in the middle of learning Gemara, you're mamish in the middle of Tosfos, you've almost cracked what Tosfos is asking, and then all of a sudden, you feel, zzz, you know, the phone is vibrating. Yeah. What is that? Is that a phone or is that, you know, you don't even know. Even on Shabbos, people think their phone is in their pocket, right? So now you have a challenge. Should you open up the phone and see what it is? It's probably the alarm you set by accident that's going off, right? Should you see what it is, or should you continue learning? So the Yitzhar says, you gotta see who's on the phone. You never know. It could be, you know, remember when you played the lottery 70 years ago? You could have won. You never know. And if you don't answer now, that's it. You'll never get the earnings. Or, you know, maybe it's like an emergency phone call, the Yetzer Hara says. Maybe it's somebody who, you know, right across the street, they're about to get hit by a car and you need to answer the phone and go save their life. Right? That's what the Yetzer Hara says. So what are you going to tell the Yetzer Hara? Says the Nathan Eliyahu, if you're going to tell the Yetzer Hara, Yetzer Hara, how many times are you going to do this to me? It's more important to learn. I don't care what you say. I'm not going to answer the phone. Guess who's going to win? The Yetzer Hara will win every single time. Because for you, if you're going to tell the Yetzer Hara no, guess what the Yetzer Hara is going to say? Yes. And the more you say no, I have to learn, I have to learn, I have to learn, the Yetzer Hara is going to come up with every reason in the world why you shouldn't be learning. So if you're going to fight the Yetzer Hara by saying no, Yetzer Hara is going to counteract that by saying yes, 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 a lot stronger than you. So says the Mechtam Eliyahu, how do you conquer the Yetzer Hara? The only way to conquer the Yetzer Hara is you gotta throw him a bone. How do you throw him a bone? You say the following. Yetzer Hara, you're right. This is a very important phone call. And that's why I'm going to check who's on my phone in 5 minutes. You're right. But not right now. I'm not going to. Right now, let me just finish up this kasha of Tosfos. As soon as I learn for 5 minutes, I'm going to look at the phone. So what are you doing? You're not really throwing the Yetzer Hara bone. You're not really going to be Mevatel. But you're sort of giving in a little bit, just enough to get him off your back, that he lessens up the pressure so that you could overcome. This is called Shochad LeSatan. You're giving a bribe to the Satan. You're not saying, no. There's no way I'm going to be Mevatel right now. If you say, no, yeah, sometimes you win. You know, if you learned a good Musar Seder and, you know, you're really flying high and you're doing well that day, maybe you'll be able to overcome the Yetzer Hara. But in most cases, you're much better off, instead of saying no, say, you're right, Yetzer Hara, I'm going to look at my phone in 5 minutes. Once you tell the Yetzer Hara in 5 minutes, you've given in to him, guess what's going to happen? You'll be able to learn for 5 minutes, and then by the time 5 minutes are over, Yetzer Hara already retreated. Because he thinks, this guy's on my side. He threw him a bone. And, come in. So, this is the concept of what we call Shaychad L'Sata. Baruch HaTah Adonai Hinu Malchei Olam Shehakol Nehi B'Dvarei. I'll give you another example, and this is the example that is very helpful, that we're going to specifically talk about tonight. That is, you know, you're walking down the street and you're confronted with a challenge. Should you look or should you not look? Yeah? So the Yetzer Hara says, look. So what are you going to do? How are you going to overcome the Yetzer Hara? If you're going to tell the Yetzer Hara, no, I'm not going to look. So you know what he's going to say? Look. And he said, no, wait. He said, just do it. And the more you fight with him, no, the more he's going to say, yes. Be very difficult to overcome. So you know what you tell the Yetzer Hara? Yetzer Hara says, look, it'll be geschmack. What's the big deal? Just look one time, then you go right into the yeshiva. No, nobody will know, nobody will care. You make believe it never happened. So you know what you tell the Yetzer Hara? You're right, it'll be very geschmack. That's why next time I walk down the street, I'm going to look at everything. Just right now, this time, I'm not going to look now, this time. Next time, and the time after that, and next week, and forever, I'm always going to look, Yetzer. Don't worry, I'm on your side. Just this time, I'm not going to look this time. So the Yetzer Hara sort of said, you're throwing me a bone, you're on my side. He backs off.
I'm saying one's an assay, one's a low assay. It's one thing to say, back off from learning in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, I'll look at my phone in 10 minutes. Okay, fine, you didn't learn for a minute, and you got distracted. But if you fail, if he gets you in the end. If he gets you in the end for this, it's a much bigger, it's an aveira.
Yeah, but if you tell him no, we're talking about doing it right now. It might not work now. Very likely it won't work now. To head off with the Yetzer Hara, where he wants you to do something, and you just to say, you know, scram, get out of here. Very difficult to fight the Yetzer Hara that way. You're not really giving in. You don't plan really to look next time. It's a psychological ploy. It's a way to deal with the challenge. Part of the reason why a challenge is so hard is because for a person in his mind to say, what? I'm never, you know what the Yetzer Hara says? He says like this, come on, give me a break. You're not going to look? You're telling me, the Yetzer Hara says, you're never going to look at anything improper ever again? Yetzer Hara says, you know that's impossible, so why bother? That's the argument of the Yetzer Hara. So that's a very hard psychological argument to win. Because you know yourself, is it taka possible always to be careful? So you tell the Yetzer Hara, you're right. I'm not always going to be careful. Instead of putting all the pressure on yourself that you have to always be careful, you don't have to worry about always at the moment. You don't have to decide you're going to be a tzaddik for the rest of your life at this moment. All you need to worry about is an assign at hand. And the assign at hand is right now. And the way to get around that is you sort of throw the Yetzer Hara bone. You tell him, yeah, you're right, it's very geschmack to look. And don't worry, Yetzer Hara, we'll have plenty of opportunities. Don't worry, you know, there are plenty of chances. That's what you tell the Yetzer Hara. And once you tell him that, then the next time you're walking down the block, he's not even going to bother you. That's the way he operates. Why is that? So Nachum Yehuda explains that the same way the Yetzer Hara could trick a person very easily, the Yetzer Hara is very gullible. Excuse me, the Yetzer Hara could trick a person very easily. We have the ability to what's called give him a taste of his own medicine. I'll give you a perfect example. Most of the time when a person hears Musar, let's say a person hears a great Musar Shmuz, about learning, about anything he's going to accept upon himself. So what does the Yetzirah say? The Yetzirah says, this Rosh Hashiva, you're going to listen to what he's saying? He doesn't know what he's talking about. This guy, you know, you should, don't listen to a word. The Yetzirah doesn't say that. What does the Yetzirah say? The Yetzirah says, that was such a good Musar Shmuel. So inspiring. That's why next week, at the beginning of the week, you're going to start to do everything he said. Just until the week, you know, for this week, let's just, like, you know, finish up the week. You know, we'll wait for a new week. We'll wait for a fresh week. What is it? Anytime a person feels a Sairus, anytime a person is inspired, what does the Yetzirah say? Wonderful inspiration. That's why you're going to start tomorrow. That's the trick of the Yetzirah. The main trick of the Yetzirah, the Mesillas Yesharim says, that there are so many people that know what their obligation in this world is, and yet they don't do anything. You know why? Because they're lazy and they say tomorrow, 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 tomorrow. The main trick of the Yetzirah against us is what? Tomorrow. The main trick of the Yetzirah is tomorrow. Anytime a person has an inspiration to do something, Yetzirah always says tomorrow, tomorrow, tomorrow. So you know what? Basically what we're doing now is we're giving the Yetzirah a taste of his own medicine. When he comes to us, do this Avera, do this Avera. So you know what we tell him? Tomorrow, tomorrow. That's all it is. It's Sheikh Al-Sata. You're giving him a taste of his own medicine. So that's the concept that the Radvaz is bringing down by the tefillin. It's not really, you wear tefillin to remind Hashem of the Chedo Egal. Well, I think you're wearing tefillin to remind Hashem. The concept behind it is, in order to get the Satan to back off, you have to sort of say, you know, Satan, I don't mean you. That's only because, you know, we're almost related. You didn't know that? No. I'll tell you after. You have to tell the Satan that, you know, you're on my team. I'm on your side. Looking, yeah, we're going to look from now on. We're going to look, just not today, not this time. Okay? So that's the first trick I want to talk about. The first trick, just to reiterate, is when a person is confronted with an Nisayon, I find the best Eitza is, you tell the Satan, next time I'm going to do it. Next time, not this time, next time. This time the Yetzer says, okay, fine, you know, I have this guy, I'll take care of him. It's a very good psychological trick. I'll tell you, I saw it recently.
Isn't that dangerous that you're going to actually look every single time after it? It's not
going to
happen?
You don't have to take like a neder that you're going to look every single time. You don't have to take like write down a shvua and get to Aiden that you're going to do it.
Safer Torah.
You know,
psychological. I said next time, you just...
I'll tell you, right? It works with my kids. Let's say you tell me, go to sleep now. What do they say? No. So what do I say? Okay. You know, I have a great idea. You could read for 30 more seconds and then we're going to go to sleep. So they don't have a problem with that. But if you tell them, you're going to do it now. No. Yeah? No? Yeah. Say, you can, honey, continue reading for 30 seconds and then you're going to go to sleep. It works. Or it works a lot easier than if you just say, you know, absolutely not. That's what it's
they go to sleep.
What? Yeah.
And then they go to sleep. The next time they know what he's
going to read. No, it's because they agree to what you want. The Satan is not coming to you now that you should look tomorrow.
And he's not gonna come tomorrow?
No, that's the concept. The concept is that you sort of you throw him the bone. That's the way he works. That's the way he works. The way he works is that you're able to trick him in this way.
Isn't the Matthias against that? When you're preaching the sun again, it's not just like, oh yeah, it's not the sun.
Look, it doesn't mean that something will never come back ever again because one time you beat him, right? He's constantly on guard. But in general, very likely the next time you're walking down the street in the same situation, because once you've conquered him, so you've strengthened your own muscles. So next time will be easier for you to conquer. It doesn't mean he'll never come back. He's mechadesh alav b'chol yoyim, and he's misgaber alav b'chol yoyim. So it doesn't mean the Yetzirah is, oh, you beat me one time, okay, I'm going to retire and move to Florida. The Yetzirah is still, you know, he's still in action. I found another...
Hasn't something picked up on our stuff by now?
No, it's like, you know, it's like the chauffeur. It's like every single year he thinks that's the way he's programmed.
Something's been around for all these years. It's something that's stupid. So
however, it works then. It works now.
I hear. Look,
it works.
Look.
Psychological.
It's a psychological trick. I found another example. You know, like this. right? Getting up for Shacharis. There are some people that find it hard to get up for Shacharis. I once heard that in other parts of the world, some people have a hard time to get up for Shacharis. Why? Part of the... Right? Imagine if, you know, a person, their brother was making a bris, and the bris was 6:30. Are they going to have a hard time getting up that morning? Probably, it would probably be a lot easier for them. Why? It's a one-time thing. They know, special occasion, one-time thing, they could get up. But to get up today on a Tuesday, you know what you're thinking to yourself? I have to get up now? Snowballed with getting up today is the fact, what? I have to get up every single day early before Shacharis? So you know what you think to yourself? You say, it's too hard to get up every single day. And therefore you tell yourself, I'm not going to get up today. But that's the satan talking. That's a satan trying to convince you that somehow getting up early today, involved in that is getting up early every single day for the rest of your life. So I saw the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch says a very interesting thing. Kitzur says that it's not hard to get up in the morning. It's actually, he says, very easy. As long as you do it three times. If you get up early, if you force yourself three times to get up early, it becomes easy. Why does it become easy? Habit. Right? One day you're going to look back and you're going to say, what? I lived in this apartment? With that, in that room over there. I saw what's going on over there. I live there? How did I live there? I'm saying, right?
What? It's awkward.
Yeah.
It's not my room.
And probably when you first came into the room, it was probably a little difficult. You know? It's like, you know, what do you say? Skip this part?
It still is.
It still is. But after a couple of days, it's life as usual. That's the normal thing. You live in a closet, basically, right? That's life. Because a person can get used to anything. That's like, in the beginning, it's very hard. But after a while, you know, you sort of, you don't even think about it. You don't even sense anymore. That's just life. So the Kitzur says, you know what you tell the Yitzhak? When it comes time to get up in the morning... So the kids would say to the Yitzhara, Yitzhara said, oh, you're going to get up every single morning and you're going to drag yourself out and you're going to fight me every morning, don't even bother. So you tell the Satan, no, I don't have to do it every single morning. I only have to do it three times. Once you do it three times, it's easy. But that's a very similar technique. It's a very similar tactic. The tactic is to take the Yitzhara head on and the Yitzhara says, don't get up, and you say, get up, it's not going to work too well. You have to be able to sort of say to him, you're right, getting up is impossible. It's impossible to get up on time for Shacharis every single day of the year. That's why, Satan, I'm only going to do it three times. And then once you do it three times, and I can say it becomes a piece of cake, but it becomes a lot easier. Okay? So that's the first technique. The first technique is, don't tell the Satan no, tell him tomorrow. Okay. You ready for the next one? The next one goes like this. Friday night, you know, your mother lights the Shabbos candles, and you know, they wave, even though nobody knows why exactly they're waving to the candles. But and then they daven. Yeah, they daven. Why are they davening when they light the Shabbos candles?
It's an
Eis Ratzon. It's an Eis Ratzon. Why is it an Eis Ratzon?
Shabbos.
Why is it Eis Ratzon? So Rabbeinu Bechaya writes in Parshas Yisroi, and he says a very important thing. Rabbeinu Bechaya says that whenever a person does a mitzvah, right, lighting the candles, that time that you do a mitzvah is an Eis Ratzon. So lighting the candles, it might be a mitzvah d'oraisa, it might be a mitzvah d'rabbanan, whatever it is. When you light the Friday night candle, it's a mitzvah. When it's a mitzvah, you do a mitzvah, it's an Eis Ratzon, it's an opportune time to daven. So therefore, women daven when they light the Shabbos candles.
That's why.
Anytime you do a mitzvah. Any mitzvah is an Eis Ratzon. In fact, you know, the Chavos Chaim used to say that people are very foolish. They daven, they say the benching. They say the first bracha, the second bracha, the third bracha, the fourth bracha. Yeah, and there could be many people, they bench with a lot of kavana, and as soon as they get up to the harachamans, they sort of zip through all the harachamans, as if the harachamans are not important. So Chavos Chaim would say, why do we say the harachamans after benching? So Chavos Chaim says, you know why? Because benching is a mitzvah d'oraisa. You just did a mitzvah d'oraisa. So take advantage of the fact that now it's an eis ratzon and ask for what you need. Harachamon, you find a stain of b'chava, you need parnasa, you need health, whatever you need. Ask for Eliyahu Hanavi. Chavetz Chaim says the harachamons are merely taking advantage of the fact that you just performed a mitzvah d'oraisa, so you want it to be an eis ratzon, it's a good time to daven. So I found an amazing idea. Okay, very, very nice idea. This is from the Rav Aaron Rata. You know who Rav Aaron Rata is? The Shari Aaron. You ever see the Shari Aaron on Chumash? Anybody ever see the Shari? So he says like this. If a person is confronted with an Isayon, let's say, you know, you're walking down the street and the Yetzer Hara says, you know, maybe you should take a look. So you know you should think to yourself, I'm about to perform a mitzvah d'oraisa. What's a mitzvah d'oraisa? Loisa suru, achavei levavchem, achavei neichem. Yeah, it's a mitzvah in the Torah, not to control your eyes. So you could say, you know what? I'm going to take advantage of this eis ratzon. I am about to perform a mitzvah d'oraisa of not gazing. I'm going to take this opportunity to daven to Hashem for whatever I need. Hashem, please make my team win the Super Bowl. Hashem, you know, whatever you happen to need at the time. Hashem, help me understand Tosfos. Hashem, help me with whatever, with my test, with whatever I need. Yeah? Hashem, help me make a good show on Thursday night. Whatever a person needs, a person should utilize the opportunity. He's performing a mitzvah d'oraisa. So the same way after you bench, it's a good time to daven. When you light the Shabbos candles, it's a good time to daven. When you're overcoming in the Sion, it's a wonderful time to daven. Now I'll tell you why this is a great trick. The reason why this helps, it's not because all of a sudden you're going to become like this holy man, you're going to start taking advantage of all these eis ratzons of every time you walk down the street, you're going to turn the other way and you're going to daven for what you need. It's also psychological. Why is it psychological? Most of the time that a person does an Avera, it's not premeditated. What I mean is like this. Most of the time a person doesn't like sit there thinking, okay, let me think, how am I going to do this Avera? I'm going to, okay, drive down to, you know, McDonald's. I'm going to go into the store. I'm going to take... No, when do people do Averas? In the heat of the moment. You know, without any forethought. Without any planning. So a person's getting involved in a conversation and a certain name comes up and you know you're talking and all of a sudden the Lashon Hara comes out. A person wasn't planning on speaking Lashon Hara. Most of the time a person does an Avera, it's not premeditated. And most mitzvos, let's say Lulav and Esrog. You ever have a person, they have an Nisayon not to take Lulav and Esrog? Of course not. Because why? They know. You have to sort of plan on doing it. You know, you wake up in the morning, you go over to the Lulav and Esrog case, you open it up, you pick it up, you say the bracha, and that's it. I don't know how too many people have a nisayon not to take a Lulav and Esrog, or not to put on tefillin, or not to put it on the mezuzah. Because, by definition, it involves planning. Anything that involves planning, you're just going to do. You're gonna think what you need to do, and you're going to do it. Anytime you sort of think about it beforehand, it's very easy to do the mitzvah. The problem with averos is that they just sort of come up in the spur of the moment without... They just spring up when you least expect it. So basically, why would a person violate, you know, Lishas Surah Achei Levavchem? Why would a person look? Because he's walking down the street, he has a million things on his mind, he's on the way to yeshiva, and without knowing yeshiva, says, okay, just, you know, right, quickly look, and you're just completely caught off guard, and you just, you know, sometimes a person will just do it. So what this Eitzah is saying is, no, oh, you're transforming a challenge, which until now you were caught off guard. You're stopping for a minute. You're pausing. You're preparing yourself, and you're saying this is an opportunity to overcome the Yetzer Hara. It's a mitzvah d'oraisa, and I'm going to use it. I'm going to utilize the opportunity to daven. I'm going to utilize the eis ratzon. So what you're doing is you're transforming a moment with which you would normally be caught off guard, you're transforming it into a pre-meditative moment of overcoming the Yetzer Hara. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Say yes.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, that's the idea. The idea is, besides the fact that what we're saying is true, that when a person does a mitzvah, they are fulfilling a mitzvah d'oraisa, and it's an opportune time to daven, but it transforms what transforms a moment with that you're not ready for, a moment that you'd ordinarily be caught off guard, you're transforming it into something that you're prepared for.
Usually there's not a gap between the time that someone will look and meaning he doesn't, he's not preparing, meaning he's not walking out his door and he's going to start davening usually.
Right, but sort of the Yitzhar says, you know, the Yitzhar sort of wants to just wash it, you know, just do it, you know, do it, get it over with, and move on. So no, what this is doing is it's, you know, putting it into slow motion. It's taking the moment, it's taking the challenge, it's putting the challenge into slow-mo, and it's allowing you to stop and understand what's unfolding before you. Okay. Let's talk about one final idea. Okay, and this is a little bit of a mystical idea also. And that is, the Gemara tells us in Masechet Anida that when a baby is in his mother's womb, so it tells us how, you know, the baby is folded over and its head is on his knees and so forth, and its mouth is closed. And the Gemara says the baby eats from what the mother eats. And the Gemara says the following. There's a candle lit over the baby's head from which the child is able to see from one end of the world to the other end of the world. And a malach comes and teaches the baby Kol HaTorah Kula. And then the Gemara says, what happens? Everybody knows the malach comes and does what? See, right? Taps you on the lip, A.B. Rattenberg says, and you forget the Torah, even though what does the lip have to do with your mind? The answer is it has nothing to do with it. It's not referring to this. Actually, the Mefarshim say the mouth is referring to your mind. So, you know, when somebody has a bump on his lip, he doesn't forget his learning. It's when you have a bump on your head, you forget your learning. The piv represents your secha, but that's a shmuz for a different time. Anyway, the Gemara says that when the baby comes out, the malach comes and makes you forget Kol HaTorah Kula. Okay? So you get the story. You're in your mother's womb. You see from one end of the world to the other end of the world. And you know Kol HaTorah Kula. And the moment you come out into La'avir Olam, you forget everything. And by the way, you can't see anything either. Right? Your sight is very limited. You could see 10 feet in front of you. So the hafla, yeah, you're learning Kedushin this year, right? So the Hafla also, right, there's a Hamakna and Kedushin, the Hafla and Ksubis. The Hafla writes in his introduction to Ksubis a very amazing idea. And the idea is that every Jewish person has two sets of eyes. Two sets of eyes. You have physical eyes, you have Enei Gashmias, you have physical eyes, and you have Enei Ruchnias, you have spiritual eyes. What allows you to understand Torah is the Enei HaSeichel, your spiritual eyes. That is, these are the eyes that perceive the MS, these are the eyes that perceive the truth, these are the eyes that are able to comprehend the Torah.
Do my right side, left side function of the brain?
No.
Because different times of the brain, they think differently.
Yeah, lefties have where they're...
No, thinking abstract and thinking of stuff that's not right in front of you, you're supposed to perceive what's exactly in front of you.
I hear ya. We're talking about a spiritual... Yeah, it's a, you have Enei HaSeichel. Okay? What's the function of the Enei HaSeichel in terms of the relationship to your physical eyes? In other words, how do your spiritual eyes work in relation to your physical eyes? Says the Hafla. The more a person is able to control their physical eyes, the stronger the spiritual eyes become. The more you sort of darken and blot out and not focus on your physical eyes, meaning in other words, not to use them to indulge in Gashmias, the stronger the spiritual eyes become. Says the Hafla, that's why the baby in his mother's womb, how functioning are his physical eyes? They're not functioning at all, he can't see a thing. That's why his spiritual eyes see from one end of the world to the other end of the world. They're the exact converse of the physical eyes. The child's in his mother's womb, his eyes are closed, his Enei HaSeichel are open, he could see to the ends of the earth, and guess how much Torah he knows? The entire Torah, Kol HaTorah Kula. The moment he comes out into this world and his eyes are open, ah, Gashmias, the Enei HaSeichel, yeah? The spiritual eyes close and all Torah is forgotten. Says the Hafla, if you want to be successful in understanding Torah, it works in converse proportion to how much a person is able to control his physical eye. So, you know, we would think, understanding Tosfos, what does it depend on? It depends on my IQ. It depends on how smart I am. It depends, you know, how much hachana I did, how much amelos I did. Well, yeah, it does depend how much amelos you did. But guess what it also depends on? It depends on how strong your enei haseichel are. And your enei haseichel are given a boost by controlling your enei gashmi. Every single time a person is able to sort of lower his enayim and say, you know what? I'm not going to indulge. What he should be thinking is, I am now getting a higher, I'm getting a better prescription for the glasses on my enei haseichel. Tomorrow when I go learn, my learning will be that much better. Because the enei haseichel work in reverse proportion to the enei hagashmi. And in fact, it's very interesting, Sam Sefer writes the following. You know, before the Jewish people got the Torah, so Hashem fed them a certain kind of food called man. And Sam Sefer says the man actually prepared them to receive the Torah. The man was sort of the preparation food to allow the Jewish people to accept the Torah. How? You know, we all grew up thinking man was wonderful, right? Right? If I ask you, what's the best thing in the world? Man, why? Because, you know, in the morning you could think, I want the man to taste like Dunkin' Donuts. In the afternoon you could think, I want it to taste like this, right? Man was wonderful? No. The Chumash says it was torturous like death. Hashem afflicted us. What could be afflictive about the man? I mean, it tastes like whatever you want. Okay? I'll tell you why. Imagine if for breakfast, lunch, and supper I fed you this and I said, think about, you know, just eat it and it will taste like whatever you want. After about 2 days you'd jump off a roof. You know why? Because most of eating is not the actual taste, it's the satisfaction of the eye. You know, the Gemara says a blind man is never full. Or you could have two guys, they both eat a pie of pizza. If the person who's blind won't feel full. Because satiation has nothing to do with the food in your stomach, and it has everything to do with, oh, if your eye sees a lot of food, you're satisfied. Satisfaction has to do with the eye. So Hashem said, look, I have to prepare Klal Yisrael for the Torah. I'll give them delicious food. But guess what the man looks like? Nothing. It was Ke'en Havada. Close. It was Ke'en Havadaylach. It was clear like crystal. Didn't look like anything. So Klal Yisrael, what they were doing was, they were weaning themselves off of the physical eye. In other words, they ate food but didn't look like anything. And the more they were able to wean themselves off their Enei Gashmi, the stronger the Enei HaSeichel became. And that is how Hashem prepared us for Kabbalah Satayra. So basically, just to review very briefly, we gave three Eitzos, three techniques to fight the Yetzirah in this Inyan of Shmiras HaEinayim. The first idea, which I think works the best, is Satan comes, look. Don't tell him no, tell him in an hour, tomorrow, not now. It's a very good trick. It's good for any Avera. You don't have to tell it. If you tell the Satan no, it's going to be very hard to overcome. That's the first trick. Second trick. Person has an Nisayon, he says, okay, I now have the opportunity to be Mekayim, a mitzvah d'oraisa. I'm going to use the opportunity to daven. Somebody, Loyalenu, is sick. Somebody needs parnasa. Somebody needs a shiv, whatever it is. Use it as an opportunity. May, in your mind, say, this is a tremendous ace rotzon. I have an opportunity to perform a mitzvah d'oraisa. It's a good time to daven. And then the third eitzah is, in general, we should understand that every time a person is able to control his Enei Gashmi, to control his physical eyes, what he's doing is, he's being mechazek, he's strengthening his Enei HaSeichel, and he'll be that much greater in his learning, in his ruchnius. I wish you all bracha v'hatzlacha. Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful night.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.